Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the second episode of WrestleMania, the podcast. Unimaginatively, I'm watching WrestleMania 2, the second one, the sequel, the next one, the next chapter, and Vince McMahon decided to go big, brave and bold with this one. WrestleMania 3 tagline, bigger, badder, better. This one, Vince went with the experiment of going to not one, but three different cities, all on the same show. So we have a card in New York, we have a card in Chicago, we have a card in Los Angeles. So depending on what venue you are at for this WrestleMania, you watch the other two portions of the show in the arena, but on closed circuit TVs and screens that were set up above the ring and around each venue. So we know where we're going tonight. So you know where we're off to first. We're off to Uniondale in New York. We're there first. And I've forgotten the name of the venue, but my apologies, it will come back to me. We are at the Uniondale Arena, imaginatively titled in Uniondale, New York. Then we go to the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Illinois. And then we go to Los Angeles. We go to the Memorial Coliseum in LA. The first time this will host WrestleMania, WrestleMania 7 will be held there. There is a story behind that we will get to at WrestleMania 7. The attendances for the evening, we have them actually pretty well split out. It's a combined attendance. They haven't gone with individual venues. They've gone with a combined attendance of 40,085. As I said, this is an experiment Vince is going to try. The other experiment, and the other fact about this is the only WrestleMania that is not held on a Sunday night. Vince decided to go with this on a Monday. It was, again, a unique experiment, a unique attempt to try something different with the show. Let's crack on. The main event is Hulk Hogan defending the World Wrestling Federation Championship against King Kong Bundy inside of a steel cage. Bundy is the latest in a line of monster challenges that Hulk Hogan faces. Vince booked Hulk Hogan pretty much bog standard for every Hogan title match. Someone who would start as a credible threat, who would be a challenge, who would have the fans thinking, you know, this is it, this is the night Hogan loses the title and Hogan comes strong. I'm not really spoiling much for you by that one, but Bundy inside a steel cage is a huge, you know, it's a huge match, it's a huge deal, and it is being played up in that way. So let's go. New York. Vince McMahon is commentating alongside Susan St. James. They've made them comfortable for themselves. There's no like chairs and monitors that you can see, but they are talking to camera, and the monitor with the action is behind the camera or to the side of the camera. They're in proper plush chairs, Vince and Susan St. James. If you look subliminally, is this the first hint of Vince McMahon revealing he owns the company? You know, it's nice to think that. So Susan St. James is going to be on commentary. We will go to Chicago after this. Let's just crack right on into it. If you listen to WrestleMania 1, the format's quite simple. I'm going to go through a brief overview of the matches, find a few little, you know, tales or little stories along the line. Let's get started. Paul Orndorff versus the Magnificent Morocco. Don Morocco has not become The Rock as yet. He's still Magnificent Don Morocco for the opening match. And he faces Paul Orndorff. In this match early on, Paul Orndorff is a strong guy. Don Morocco is how Vince McMahon and how fans like their wrestlers in the 80s. Big, muscular. Steroids, definitely. However, the fact that Paul Orndorff, who's no small guy himself, body slams Don Morocco, and the crowd go absolutely nuts for that. They go absolutely crazy. They make out that Don Morocco hasn't, you know, has never been picked up like this. On the network, a bit of this match is edited out. Because at the end of the day, there's no other way of putting it, Paul Orndorff's racist. He turns to Don Morocco's manager, Mr. Fuji, and makes a facial expression, you know, which is derogatory to Japanese people. That's been edited out. To make himself even more endeared to the crowd, he then, which is largely Italian-American, throws up a bit of a fascist salute. Again, edited out of the network broadcast, but doing a bit of research, you find out why when you watch it on the network, why the match jumps pretty early on through the match as well. Apparently, if you have this on video or DVD, you won't see the footage either. From all the research I've done, the footage has been erased from history, so which is not a bad thing. This match continues. It's a strong guy match. You know, both men work holds on each other, both men work moves. It bundles out of the ring, ends in a double count out. People aren't really too shocked that the history of double count outs already in a WrestleMania matches and events. But the New York crowd are happy enough with that. You know, Don Morocco will move on to face for the Intercontinental title and go through a program with Macho Man Randy Savage. For Paul Orndorff, this is the start of his end of his run in WWF. He will be on WCW broadcasting in the not too distant future. This is a bit of an era for Paul Orndorff where he kind of jumps between both the WWF and Ted Turner's WCW or Jim, well, still Jim Crockett Promotions, but you may know it as WCW at the time. He does go bouncing through a few territories. So this is pretty much a goodbye, so to speak, for Paul Orndorff and the World Wrestling Federation. He's run a program with Hogan. Hogan's, you know, successfully retained the title. And as I said, that's his pretty much his goodbye. Don Morocco moves on to Intercontinental title challenges with the Macho Man Randy Savage. Talking of Randy Savage, he's up next. He's facing the George the Animal Steel for the Intercontinental title. Randy Savage has held the title for a couple of months now. And George the Animal Steel is a unique character, even in professional wrestling. This guy, bald-headed, as a hairy guy myself, I'm not ashamed to say this guy is a walking carpet. The storyline behind this is that George the Animal Steel has a thing for Miss Elizabeth, Randy Savage's valet and Randy's real life partner at the time. They were on the verge of getting married in real life. But Randy Savage already, according to a lot of guys in the locker room, was showing massive, massive pangs of jealousy to anyone who would approach Elizabeth without him being there or talking to her. He was a very, very jealous, very paranoid guy when it came to his better half. So Vince McMahon basically allayed Savage's worst fears by writing a storyline along these lines. So, and it leads to an Intercontinental title match. The match itself is, it's very different. It is, and what I say by very different, George the Animal Steel is very easily distracted the moment Liz is in his eyeline. So as an actual match, it doesn't have as much of a flow as a Randy Savage match would have. Randy Savage matches are very technical, very clinical masterclasses. This, not so much, because the storyline is this infatuation, this Beauty and the Beast storyline that this has. And, you know, you can look at it one of two ways. You know, who is actually the Beast? Is George the Animal Steel the Beast because he's not handsome to look at? Or is Randy Savage the Beast because of his paranoia and his jealousy? So depending on which side of the fence you want to watch the match, you can see it one of two ways. But as I said, it's very truncated. It's very, very disjointed for that simple reason, because of the infatuation. Every time George the Animal Steel gets a build up on Savage or takes control of the match, he's distracted by Miss Elizabeth inadvertently, but he could be choking Randy Savage out, or he could have Savage in the corner. Miss Elizabeth will move and then he'll let Savage go. As the match wears on, Savage takes control of the match. He takes control of the advantage that George Steel is, you know, infatuated, he is obsessed. Ends up beating him down and has him laid out ready for his finish move, the patented Randy Savage elbow, top rope, arms in the air, index fingers pointing skywards, crashes down on George the Animal Steel. One, two, no. He kicks out. George the Animal Steel is the first man that we know of in any territory Randy Savage has ever worked in to have kicked out of this finishing move. As I said, it's never happened before. Again, George Steel tries to make a bit of a comeback. Again, infatuated by Miss Elizabeth, it is downfall. Savage wins with a roll-up in the end. But to make sure that the Animal stays down, he puts both feet on the top rope to leverage. A standard bad guy move in professional wrestling. Savage retains the Intercontinental title. George Steel, again, will move on and stay around the mid-card. He was a guy that you put for fun matches. But a fact about George Steel as well, he was part-time. Even though he worked for the World Wrestling Federation, he was a full-time teacher at school. So at weekends, he'd be wrestling for Vince. Monday to Friday, he was probably, you know, if you were a kid in the early 80s, a school kid, especially around the New York area, he was your teacher. So you never know. Our third match here from the Coliseum in the Uniondale is Jake the Snake Roberts against George Wells. Now, I must admit, this, I don't know much about George Wells at all. The match itself is a short, it is a short match. As I said, I've never really heard of him. It seems strange to almost have like a jobber style match. What I mean by a jobber is someone who literally comes to make the contracted talent look really good on TV. A lot of wrestlers who work for local promotions in the area, whenever any big promotion comes into town, be it the World Wrestling Federation, be it WCW, be it ECW, be it anyone like that, they would hire wrestlers from smaller promotions who work in church halls, who work in armories, who work in, you know, shows in nightclubs before the club opens. They would hire them, they would get paid probably the best payday of their career at the time, work for 3, 4, 5 minutes, and all they were there to do is to make the talent that the World Wrestling Federation, WCW, ECW brought in look good on TV. That's their job. That's why they were called jobbers. They were never to win. That's what they're there to do. Enhancement. And make the new guys, the big guys, look good. That's what but this is, really. It's a glorified squash match. It's a glorified, you know, quick 2-3 minutes. Fair play to George Wells. He takes a DDT off Jake. He sells for him so good. I mean, when he gets hit with the DDT, he flops up. If you've ever seen The Rock sell a stunner for Stone Cold, that's what George Wells does for the DDT for Jake Roberts. Feet land on the top rope and everything. Very short match. Very short indeed. Jake, after the DDT, gets Damien out of the bag and decides to put it round George Wells' throat. Yeah. Which, you know, I know he didn't. He just used to lay them on the chest, but he went through a phase of wrapping the snake round the guy's throat. So George Wells ended up, it starts constricting, which is a bit concerning, but Jake gets onto it pretty quick. And Jake Roberts, in the next year, will carry on his run. He gets close around this era to Hogan. But a lot of backstage politics start taking shape between now and WrestleMania 4 for Jake. Jake Roberts is seen as almost like the third good guy in the company behind Hogan and Savage at this point. So Jake's in a really, really tough spot. He would have been Intercontinental Champion or World Champion if it wasn't for the two guys ahead of him. I truly believe that. And this is the point where Jake knows his worth. He knows how good he is. And he's just content to bide his time for now. For George Wells, I don't know where he is, where he went. I hope he's still okay, if he's still with us. Now then, the final match, the main event in New York, is a boxing match. Mr. T versus Rowdy Roddy Piper. this is carrying on from, you know, as we know, my friends from WrestleMania 1, when Piper and T were on opposite sides for the very first main event of WrestleMania at Madison Square Garden. The bad blood is still legitimate. Roddy Piper doesn't like Mr. T. Mr. T cannot stand Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper's got Golden Gloves boxing experience. Mr. T has the same, as well as being an actual nightclub bouncer, which is how he was discovered for movies and how he ended up in the A-Team and as part of the Rock and Wrestling connection for WrestleMania. So the bad blood here is legitimate. This must have been Vince's biggest risk and biggest concern, probably the whole night, because this is the match that, although, you know, it's predetermined, even though it's a boxing match, it's predetermined. If they decide to start walloping each other for real, this could go really badly wrong. Anyway, on to the match itself. Smoking Joe Frazier is running Mr. T's corner. Lou Duva, who ended up managing Evander Holyfield to the World Heavyweight Championship, is in Piper's corner. Of course, Ace Bob Orton is with Roddy Piper. There is a little bit of a run-up as part of this match. And I can't... I'm just looking now at how I've... Let's put it this way. Roddy Piper and Bob Orton were very, very cruel to a small guy. Shaved his head, made him look like Mr. T in a Piper's Pit sketch where Piper's reenacting the match or acting out how the fight's going to go. Again, this is something that is heavily edited out of the network version because beating up on smaller adults is frowned upon these days. So this is heavily edited out. Again, it just shows in less than two generations how times have changed and how what was once more than acceptable now isn't. So the early WrestleManias, the network have to do a lot of heavy editing. The fight itself isn't a bad fight, to be fair. It's not a bad little scrap at all. I've got my scorecard here. I'm going to just run through it pretty quickly for you. So for the opening round, they're feeling each other out. A good few punches are thrown. As the bell rings, they won't let go. They won't break for the referee. So both corners have to get involved. At the start of the second round, Lou Duva has left a ridiculous amount of grease on Piper's head above his right eyebrow. I mean a ridiculous amount. It's in his hair and everything. It looks like something about Mary. T complains about the grease. The referee tells him to go and wipe it off. There's still a clump on there, about an eighth of an inch thick when it comes down to it. The second round itself, T's legit hurt. He's exhausted by the middle of the second round. This fight, I forgot to mention, is 10 3-minute rounds. So they booked it as a legit boxing match. Under the auspices of the New York State Athletic Commission, they have to have corners, there has to be doctors at ringside. You know, it's a legit boxing match, but between two guys who might not be the best at boxing. T's absolutely exhausted, to the point where Piper hits him and Piper puts him down. He puts T down, but Piper goes to his own corner. He doesn't go to a neutral corner. Now this gives T... My clock made it 35 seconds. There was about 30 to 35 seconds between T going down and the count starting. And T just about gets up on 9. And I mean just about. So T was down for the best part of 3/4 of a minute. So he was, you know, he was out on his feet. I've watched enough boxing matches in my time to know when someone's actually exhausted. And he wasn't play acting. He was absolutely exhausted. Towards the end of the round, literally 20 seconds from the end of the round, Piper drops him again. The people are just going nuts now for Piper. This is what shouldn't be happening in the match. They should be cheering for T, booing Roddy Piper. They're cheering for Piper. They can see Mr. T isn't bothered. He hasn't trained. He doesn't really care too much. Smoking Joe Frazier has to help T back to the corner. Piper's shouting at Mr. T, you know, telling him to give up. The usual bad guy stuff in pro wrestling. Start of the third round, not long into it, and T drops Piper. Again, Piper looks absolutely fine. So, again, I'm assuming now the third round, we're back into how this match should be getting booked on all the way along. So Piper goes down. He goes down a second time. And the spot is meant to be where T hits Piper so hard, Piper falls through the ropes and just about gets back in the ring and on his feet for a 10 count. The downside is T is so exhausted that he misses. He clean misses and Piper goes down to an air shot. You know, Ali V. Liston. Third round ends. And with this, Piper's had enough. I think Piper is legitimately angry at T because he doesn't throw the stool just across the ring. He launches it at Mr. T's corner. I think it hits Smoking Joe. And I think Piper suddenly realised what he did because you kind of see a glove go up in apology, you know, just on the sly. Have a look. If you ever do want to watch it, have a look. It is almost... He launches the stool, it hits Joe Frazier, and almost this benedictory hand of apology goes up. Fourth round. As I said, Piper's had enough by now. They start throwing a few punches. The referee's distracted by Lou Duva, but the referee then turns around just in time to see Mr. T body slam by Piper. Fight over, round over, match over, T wins by disqualification. That is New York done. So, quick couple of seconds, I'm just going to... take a moment. And to quote a couple of podcast presenters I listen to, Mr. Pettigallo and Wissman, let's go on a trip. Where are we going, guys? We are going to Chicago. We're going to the Rosemont Horizon now in Chicago, Illinois, where we are going to join Gorilla Monsoon and Mean Gene Okerlund, who are on commentary for this card. The opening match is, get my notes ready, it is the Fabulous Moolah versus Velvet McIntyre. Fabulous Moolah is in her second spell as World Wrestling Federation Women's Champion. Fabulous Moolah is also still in her first major spell of completely controlling women's wrestling in the World Wrestling Federation. Again, it's a podcast I may do somewhere else down the line about the Fabulous Moolah and how her and her husband ran the show even while working for Vince McMahon. There really is not a lot to tell you about in this match. The match lasts about 90 seconds, if that. Velvet McIntyre attempts to do a splash off the second rope. Moolah misses. McIntyre hits the deck. Moolah with a simple roll-up and retains the title. It's an absolutely nothing match. I can't even be positive about it. It's designed to make Moolah look and feel good. It's as simple as that. This is Vince McMahon pacifying Fabulous Moolah. Between now and the next couple of years, Vince is looking for a way to take the title off Moolah and pretty much just relegate her to backstage stuff. The second match on the card is a flag match between Corporal Kirshner and Nikolai Volkov. Corporal Kirshner is, at the time, because Sergeant Slaughter wasn't working for the World Wrestling Federation, is Vince's version of Sergeant Slaughter. The Sarge was working for the AWA in Memphis, where Jerry the King Lawler was. The AWA, the American Wrestling Association, run by Vern Gagne at the time. So Sergeant Slaughter was massive there. So Vince went, well, if I can't get him, I'm going to hire the next best thing. So it is quite simple. Whoever wins this match can get to wave their flag amongst the crowd. Nikolai Volkov booed out the building when he starts trying to sing the Russian national anthem. Classy Freddie Blassie playing along as the orchestra. To be honest with you, it's... I'd describe Corporal Kirshner, Sergeant Slaughter, Stroke, Hacksaw, Tim Duggan in camouflage. The match is a pretty decent match. They're two strong guys. They work hard. They work, you know. And then it's we go for a Blassie finish, shall we call it. Classy Freddie Blassie goes to throw his cane to Nikolai Volkov. Kirshner catches it. The referee doesn't see it. Whacks Volkov, pins him for the victory. And then that's it. The Stars and Stripes are paraded for all to see in the Rosemont Horizon. Again, Chicago are absolutely loving it. It's a wrestling town. It's a patriotic town. Our third match, and technically what's our main event, is the Battle Royal. There are 20 men in the Battle Royal, 14 WWF superstars and 6 National Football League players. Bill Frelick is one of the Atlanta Falcons. Ernie Holmes, who was at Pittsburgh at the time, if I think right on rightly, and William the Refrigerator Perry, part of the Chicago Bears Super Bowl winning team. And by then, the guy that pretty much brought NFL mainstream to the UK, because he was the first guy most people my age had heard of when the NFL was being shown on Channel 4. They started with the Super Bowl in the mid-80s. It was the first we saw, you know, us Brits saw of it, especially live. And as I said, William Perry was the first guy that we kind of all remember and recognised. So if NFL needs to thank anyone for crossing over to the United Kingdom, it's William the Refrigerator Perry that we have to thank for that. It is if you've seen a Battle Royal before, you know what it is. It's hard. It's not that difficult to describe. 20 men all in the ring at once. The bell rings and it's absolute carnage. You have to throw your opponents over the top rope. The last man left in the ring is the winner. Andre the Giant is in this Battle Royal. Now, Andre the Giant is on this incredible streak that would make Bill Goldberg's WCW streak look like a little gnat or a little grain of sand on a beach. Andre the Giant has been booked to not lose, not for a year, not for 171 matches, but Andre the Giant hasn't lost any form of match in 14 years at this point. So let's let that sink in. 14 years he's been booked to win every match he's ever been in. But yeah, he's never lost a Battle Royal in his entire career. Now, he started wrestling in the 60s, so you're talking over 20 years. For this, you know, for a Battle Royal career. It doesn't change. The NFL stars have a bit of a good run. We get the moment we want to see in the middle of the Battle Royal where the NFL stars are all pinned into relevant corners, and we see William the Refrigerator Perry against Big John Studd. Andre doesn't want to work that spot, and if Andre doesn't want to work that spot, he's not working that spot. So John Studd did it, and John Studd dumps the fridge out. We carry on with the match. The final three people in the end are Andre the Giant, surprise surprise, and the Hart Foundation, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Bret the Hitman Hart. They are bad guys at the time, the Hart Foundation. They go after Andre as a tag team. Andre struggles at first, then manages to get them one at a time, you know, individually. Anvil goes first, Bret goes last. Andre the Giant remains unbeaten, remains undefeated career in Battle Royals, and has won this one as well. The main of the actual main, I'd say the main event, it's not the end. I'd say, how am I going to put it? Co-main event, shall we, for Chicago? All right, my friends, the co-main event for the tag team titles between the British Bulldogs, the Davey Boy Smith, and the Dynamite Kid. And the dream team of Greg Valentine and Brutus Beefcake. Brutus hasn't got his degree in barbery yet, or haircutting, hairdressing, whatever you want to call it. So he's still just plain old Brutus. Ozzy Osbourne is in the corner of the Bulldogs. Ozzy Osbourne attends, obviously being from Birmingham. He decides, you know what? I want a bit of this, want a bit of star power. Again, Vince is using is using the Stars in Chicago. As I said, Ozzy Osbourne's there, managed by Captain Lou Albano, again still with a rubber band pierced to his cheek. Lord only knows why. Into this match, the match is really good. I mean, really good. You've got four guys. I mean, Brutus can work. You know, I know a lot of people turn around and go, oh, all the gimmicks and all the characters he's played, and he's only there because he's Hogan's friend. Brutus Beefcake and Davey Boy Smith have a real good chemistry in this match. A lot of power moves, a lot of strongholds, and then they leave the technical stuff to Greg Valentine and the Dynamite Kid. Greg Valentine, Gorilla Monsoon says it on commentary that this match could take a while because Greg the Hammer Valentine could take takes 20 minutes to warm up before he gets into a match. Thankfully, he does warm up a bit quicker than that. There's a lot of chain wrestling when it comes to him and the Dynamite Kid. What I mean that is move after move after move, or hold after hold after hold. The crowd really, really loved this match. They're really getting into it. I enjoyed it as well. It was good to see Davey Boy Smith wrestling. He's passed a long time ago. The Dynamite Kid, Tom Billington, you know, his life, when the Bulldogs split, Tom moved back to Wigan, and his life really, really didn't have a positive turn at all, unfortunately, for such a talented wrestler. But it was nice as a Brit, and it was nice because obviously for a lot of Brits the Bulldog was one of the guys we looked up to once we realised we had someone there. And it was good to see a very young Davey Boy Smith. The running power slam, Brutus Beefcake gets nailed with the running power slam. Greg Valentine comes in to make the save, and Dynamite Kid comes in. The four of them are, you know, the referee's got the match. It's completely out of control. Dynamite Kid is stood in one of the corners. He's dropped Valentine. Sorry, my apologies. He's dropped Beefcake to the floor. Davey Boy Smith shoves Valentine into the corner. Valentine clashes heads with the Dynamite Kid. Kid drops to the floor as well. And then Valentine hits the deck. Davey Boy Smith pins Greg the Hammer Valentine. We have new tag team champions. And the reign, which lasted 7 months, of the Dream Team of Greg the Hammer Valentine, Brutus Beefcake, is over. Your new WWF tag team champions, the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, and the Dynamite Kid, Tom Billington. Great match. The best match on the card so far for me. I'm going to take another little pause, and then we should be off the plane. And we've left Chicago, and we're on to LA. Four more matches to go. We're in LA. We are in the Memorial Coliseum in Los Angeles, California. As I said, this won't be the first time we will be in Los Angeles. Jesse the Body Ventura is on commentary with Lord Alfred Hayes for this. These two, I've got to say, work so well together. Lord Alfred Hayes is traditionally a bit of a bad guy commentator, but he's working with Jesse, who's the ultimate bad guy commentator at the time. So Lord Alfred Hayes has to be the play-by-play guy. He will call the match, he will call the moves and the spots and the event. Jesse, before this all starts, Jesse Ventura does an interview with Hogan. Hogan forgets who he's with, calls Jesse Vince. If looks could kill. I'm not a fashionista, but I've got to say this. Jesse the Body looks, honest to God, if you can get a still of what Jesse's wearing. Lord Alfred Hayes is in a dinner suit. Jesse Ventura, it's like someone's turned around and told everyone else it's a formal dinner party, 7:30 for 8 p.m. And someone has said to Jesse, wear what you want. It's fancy dress. Jesse Ventura turns up in a blazer, a beret, and with boas on. And he's got a wig that's like a chainmail Scott Steiner. You know, like the chainmail Scott Steiner wore during his early Big Papa Pump era. He's got one of those on under the beret. He's wearing a blazer and he's got feather boas around him. He's got these sunglasses on that are ridiculous. And it is. It's like someone's told him, fancy dress, 8 for 8:30. And they've told everyone else, dinner party, 7:30 for 8. It's a sight to behold, I'll be honest with you. But it doesn't detract from the chemistry the two of them have got on commentary. Ricky Steamboat facing Hercules in the first match. It is a short but a really good good guy, bad guy match. Hercules Hernandez is again big, jack, stacked, 80s wrestler that Vince loves. Comes in carrying a 20-foot, thick chain that John Cena would then adapt with the padlock later on in his career. Again, the theme of this is the opening match is really, really short. Ricky Steamboat in this match, it's back and forth. It's your... I'm going to use this phrase a lot throughout this series. Wrestling 101. The good guy starts strong. The bad guy takes the match over in the middle after the good guy makes a mistake. The crowd get into it. The crowd start, getting really on the bad guy's back. And then you have your comeback where Ricky Steamboat, as I said, literally does what it says on the tin. Starts gaining momentum back in the match. The crowd are really... There's no false finishes, which... again, means where there's a pinfall, where you think the match is going to be over and it isn't. He hits a flying body press, but Hercules does. My apologies, but I've written it down on my notes wrong. It was Hercules. He goes on the second rope, tries Ricky Steamboat's finisher from the second rope, which is the flying body press. Basically, jump in the air, go across your opponent's body, your momentum puts them on the floor and you pin them. Hercules tries that for some reason, misses. Steamboat does the move from the top rope, catches the leg, hooks it, 1, 2, 3, and Steamboat's your winner. Another short match coming up now, and I do mean short. Adrian Adonis with the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, is facing a guy called Uncle Elmer. How to describe Uncle Elmer. It's not even a Hillbilly Jim style character. It's not anything like that. It's not like a Godwin style character. Let's call it what it is. It's worse. It's absolutely worse. Oh, and Adrian Adonis has won. There we go. That's the match. Part of the issue with WrestleMania 2 is they put matches together for putting matches together sake. And I'll come on to that when we summarise at the end. The next last match is the Funk Brothers against Junkyard Dog and Tito Santana. Hoss Funk, who looks very, very, very similar to Dory Funk. The Funk Brothers are legendary from Amarillo, Texas. Both of whom have held the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance World Heavyweight title. Something for wrestling fans that don't know, pre the World Wrestling Federation, America was split up into what were called territories, where various states had their own promotion. They all worked together as, under the banner of the National Wrestling Alliance. And when it came time to change in champion, it was done by a voting process before the match, before the match was booked and was scheduled to happen. And obviously, most promotions wanted their guy to be champion. And then, there was a lot of politics going on. And, well, if you pick my guy to be champion, I'll guarantee he'll come to your promotion 3 times a month. If you decide my guy's going to be champion, I'll make sure he defends to a 60-minute draw against your, territory champion, so it doesn't leave him looking bad when when the world champion leaves. And for two brothers to be voted to do this was very, very rare. Dory and Terry Funk, that's their brief history, both NWA World Heavyweight Champions. It's a fun little tag match, this, with Junkyard Dog and Tito Santana. This is primarily designed to get the crowd settling down and relaxed and then towards the end of the match, as you should do, start winding them up, getting them built up, because they know what's coming next, the main event. This match, it starts nice and slow. Junkyard Dog doing his usual bag of tricks, you know, dropping down all fours, headbutting Terry Funk, headbutting Dory Funk. Tito Santana, God love him, he's too much of a technico for this match. He's too technical a wrestler. But he plays his part, and he lets the Funks, batter him. So then obviously the crowd pops when Junkyard Dog hits. Perfect. Again, Junkyard Dog, one of the biggest African American wrestlers at the time, in a predominantly African American arena at that time. Absolutely perfect for JYD to go over in this match. And which he does. The end of the match, he gives the megaphone to Terry Funk. But then Terry Funk hits Junkyard Dog, and the crowd actually go home disappointed, because JYD has to take the pin. He takes the shot from the megaphone, but booked in such a way so that Junkyard Dog, is still popular in that area. And we move on. And it is the main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. It's a steel cage match. Hulk Hogan defending the title against King Kong Bundy. Now, Hogan has been champion now for a little over 15 months. He won the title back in January 1984. Didn't defend it at WrestleMania. And he goes into this match. Something I've never really understood with professional wrestling, when they say, oh, his ribs are injured. Hogan's ribs are injured after being squashed with the Avalanche, which is King Kong Bundy's finishing move. But it's not his ribs that are taped. It's just above the waistband line on his trunks. So his stomach is taped up, not his ribs. But they're selling it as though Bundy crushed his ribs in the match. Bobby Heenan managing King Kong Bundy here. This is the start for Bobby Heenan of, again, a near 2-year run chasing the WWF title. We will come along across a similar storyline. Well, I think it's a similar storyline 25 years later. Well, we won't go into it too much now. We'll get this done and out of the way. This is a Hogan 101 match. The bad guy takes control from pretty early on. It doesn't take long for Bundy to get to the ribs. Punches, slams, bear hugs. I've got to say, there's not many better that can sell a bear hug like Hogan, to be fair. We'll see it again at WrestleMania 3. The way he stretches out and pleads to the crowd for help, pleading to his Hulkamaniacs. Bundy's got him, he's crushing him, and the arm is going out, and it's an anguished look on Hogan's face. I'm not Hogan's biggest fan, but he can sell a bear hug, and it's like, please, please help me, Hulkamaniacs. And Bundy, just every time you squeeze it, Hogan's face contorts, and again, the arm goes out, he's reaching for someone to come in and save him. The comeback happens. Hogan's, a couple of forearms to Bundy's head, slams his head into the cage. Bundy just at first sells it like it's nothing. He comes back off the cage. Hogan throws him back into the cage a second time. It wobbles him a bit. Throws him into the cage a third time. Hogan asks the crowd, shall he slam him? He goes to slam him. He can't take it because of his back and his ribs, because of that crushing bear hug earlier on in the match. Then Bundy regains control. He hits the Avalanche. He hits the big splash. He goes to the pin. 1-2. Hogan kicks out. The crowd go absolutely bedlam mental. Sorry, I tried to merge mental and bedlam there. They go absolutely crazy. Hulk does what Hulk do. Bundy hits him once, shaking, twice shaking, three times. Hogan gets up, starts hulking up, whole body shaking. He's got no hair on the top of his head. The hair at the back shaking like crazy. The fourth shot, the finger in the face. Bundy goes to hit him again. Block, one punch, two punch, three. Back into the ropes. Irish whip through to the other rope. Big boot off the cage. But because it's a cage match, Hogan can't win by pinfall. He has to escape the cage. So with that, Hogan starts slowly climbing. Bobby Heenan comes to try and stop him. He gives Heenan a kick, drops to the floor. Hulk Hogan, still your reigning defending World Wrestling Federation champion. And then, as all good guys do in this situation, you grab the manager, you throw him in the cage, you throw him to both sides of the cage, and then hit him with a finish move, and leave the cage a second time. Bundy and Heenan are fuming. Hogan posing for the crowd outside of the cage. Jesse Ventura is fuming. Lord Alfred Hayes is loving it. Hogan does his poses. The WrestleMania 2 sign comes up at the bottom, and the fans go home happy. Right, that's it. I've rushed through it, and the reason I rushed through it is because I'm going to get this out of the way with full disclosure. I watched WrestleMania 2 in its entirety, but I couldn't concentrate on it for the simple reason it just wasn't very good. My notes there are as best as I could do. For me, WrestleMania 2 was an experiment that didn't work. Having it in three venues, having three separate commentary teams. The celebrities they brought in brought nothing to the event. Susan St. James had less product knowledge than Vince McMahon on commentary. Ozzy Osbourne stood there and did nothing. The guest ring announcers, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, just, you didn't even really see her. You heard her voice, but you didn't see her. The only celebrity that was a highlight for me was Ray Charles singing the America the Beautiful, because it's Ray Charles. I do think that splitting the venues didn't work. I think having it on a Monday night didn't work. Both of these Vince will never do again. He made the experiment, he tried, it failed. But he tried it. So you've got to give kudos to Vince for trying, if nothing else. This, for me personally, I mean, you may be a fan of WrestleMania 2. For me, this will probably be as bad as it gets. However, there is light. The tag match between the Dream Team and the Bulldogs was fantastic. It was great fun. If you like short, you know, Savage and George the Animal Steel, you know, it's Randy Savage and it's the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship. It's the start of the playing on Savage's jealousy, which is a career-long story angle. You know, this isn't a story that lasted just this match. This is a story for poor Randy Savage that lasted the best part of 15 years. Moving on from this, George Steele does get two further IC Intercontinental title shots. Again, he loses the second time, though. The stakes are raised because Elizabeth is on the line as well. We also start seeing the build to Savage and Hogan. Between WrestleMania 2 and 3, Savage and Hogan is starting to build. And if you know your wrestling, you know where this is going. So I'm going to leave it with that positive. The end of WrestleMania 2 and the couple of months after WrestleMania 2 sees the start of the biggest feud in professional wrestling in the 1980s for the World Wrestling Federation. So thanks for listening. Thanks for getting through WrestleMania 2 with me. I hope you'll be back for WrestleMania 3 when we are going to the Pontiac Silverdome in Detroit, or the Superdome, or is it the Silverdome? Where there is going to be over 93,000 people-ish watching Andre the Giant battle Hulk Hogan in the main event of WrestleMania 3. So, I've been Ant McKenna. Thanks very much for listening. And as always, I'll catch you down the road.